This is the money that you've worked and you've saved and you've said no to yourself to have some money. And imagine just going with your investments. Well, as long as it sort of is going up, generally speaking, I mean, what does it really matter if they're taking 5% away from my money every year? It matters a lot. Please pay attention to this stuff. We are telling you that protecting the money that you've already got is part of your job. Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss. Mark, I don't know when this is airing, but it's nearly July here in the real world where we're recording. The last time we spoke and I asked, you said the temperatures in Utah were outrageously mild and enjoyable. Have you started feeling the feeling of summer where you are?
It's hot, but it's not crazy hot.
Have you visited a pool?
You know, Steve, it's funny you should ask. Yesterday was a holiday in the Parrott family because it was the birthday of my wonderful wife. And one of the things that she wanted to do on her birthday was visit the pool.
Okay.
And so we went to the pool and we went to the first pool and they said, I'm sorry, there has been a lightning strike reported within 10 miles of here, so we are required to shut down for 30 minutes. So we said, okay, there's no clouds. There's that one cloud over there, and it's not anywhere near us, so we'll go to a different pool.
And the lifeguards are always like, sorry, pal, it's out of my hands. That's the policy. I have to go sit and drink a Coke in the break room.
And pool number two, however, they were happy to take our money. They said, give us the $30 of admission.
Yeah.
We got in, we found a spot, spread our towels out. Two of the little girls jumped in the water and got soaking wet. And then they blew their whistles and said, we just got a call from the county that there has been a lightning strike.
Oh, my word.
Within 10 miles. And at this point, it's like sunny skies with the one cloud still off in the distance.
Oh, that's bad.
We didn't get to do the pool day that I wanted, but we still celebrated the most wonderful woman in our lives for most of the day.
That's good. Now, was this the place that you've taken my family where there's the two high dives and there's the water slides and the whole
shebang?
That
was pool number two. That's the one that we tried to do. And I was in line for the water slides when the whistle was blown.
that's a painful cut there. You ready to rock and roll?
Let's do it. We have so much to cover today.
Okay, I want you to set us up, Mark. How did we get into what we're about to do? Why are we even covering this topic?
I mean, what we did in the last episode where we kind of prepared for, really, it's going to be a mini-series. It's going to be an Abraham's Wallet mini-series on the topic of protection. This is something that was brought to our attention by probably our most comically gifted member of our community. We have a Britishman? A Brit?
Yes.
Yeah, Jono. And he suggested that we need to talk about the idea of protecting not just your money, but all five capitals. And we went through what that looks like and sort of gave some general principles that apply to protecting all five capitals, whether you're talking about protecting your relationships or your money or your physical stuff. You told an extended narrative of the disaster that befell you when a group of bandits visited your home.
Who can forget?
But this week, we're going to jump into one of those capitals, and it's the one, listeners, that you know us for this one. This is financial capital. And I'll just say that anything we talk about today, there's so many pieces that we have done whole episodes on. So I'm going to be linking to those in the show notes. And if you hear something and go, I would like more on that, odds are we have done a deep dive into a whole bunch of these. And my goal today is more to give you a survey of, like, what is the landscape when it comes to the things I need to have on my radar in order to be protective of financial capital? So that's the goal. We're going to work our way up the capital's ladder and end up at spiritual capital.
We we've spent a lot of time trying to go into depth many times to talk about how does one come about financial capital? How does one come by money? How do I get that money? How do I maximize that money? And now why don't you just start talking us through, Mark, how do I not lose the money that I already have? So it's come into my house, there it is. How can I make sure that that stays as big and resourceful to my generations as possible?
Yeah, so my first thought here is, have you heard of diversification? The old saying of don't put all your eggs in one basket, really, really true when it comes to anything we're going to put money in so that it will grow. So we'll talk a little bit today about just one of the ways you can lose your money is just not paying attention to where you're spending it. And now we wouldn't say don't spend money. You need to spend money. But for a lot of people, when they think of protecting their financial capital, their first thought is, well, I have investments. Maybe you invest in real estate. Maybe you invest in the stock market. A lot of you have a 401k at an employer. Some people are into crypto. There's all sorts of places you might put money in order to see it grow for the long term. And did you know, Steve, that that is a biblical mandate for what you're supposed to do with money?
I had heard that you're actually supposed to do it that way.
Ecclesiastes 11 is a verse that you and I have talked about a lot when it comes to diversification. It says, cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a portion to seven or even to eight, for you do not know what disaster may happen. This verse is saying, don't put it all in one spot because you don't know what's coming, so spread it out. And when it comes to financial investing, we've covered ways to use the investment options that are available in almost any type of financial account, whether you have a 529 plan or a 401k, or you just set up a brokerage account for yourself. We want to be diversified not only across, a lot of people think, well, I really like Apple and I really like Google. That's a big company. Tesla is very interesting to me. I see a lot more Teslas driving around these days. And how about Nvidia? I've heard a lot about AI and Nvidia. They seem to be, and they'll say, well, now I'm invested in four companies, four really big companies that are very unlikely to just go out of business tomorrow. Do you think that that person is actually diversified? If they took their money, they spread it out across four big, solid kind of companies that have been around for a long time.
I do not, Mark. I don't think of that person as diversified.
You're right. And the reason is because everything they've invested in is kind of the same thing, right? These are large American technology companies. And so anytime we think about investing, we think about diversification, not only across individual companies. And when we're managing money for people, we very rarely invest in individual companies because of the options out there today that allow us to invest in all of the companies in any given asset class. And then once we've done that, we say, well, the S&P 500, that's a really nice way to buy a huge swath of the biggest companies in the United States. If we just invest in the S&P 500, I would say still not diversified. We own a little piece of 500 companies now, but they're still in a large cap American bucket. And what I want is to say, let's have some of our money there. Let's take some of our money and put it in other countries' companies. Let's have some of our money in real estate markets and maybe even in commodities like gold and things that are going to resist inflation. And maybe we take a slice of our wealth and we put some in this new crypto idea and have a piece of our wealth there. And you get the idea. What we're doing is saying we're going to be spread across a variety of investments. And what happens, some of these do well in a given year and some of them do poorly in a given year. And a lot of people who end up poor say, well, I have a new 401k. I'm going to look at which funds did the best in the last year or 5 years, and I'm going to invest all my money in those because they're doing the best. Well, the problem is that everything tends to be cyclical. And so when we're diversified across a lot of asset classes, we catch the things that are up. When they're going up, we're riding that wave, but we're also investing in the things that might be down because they're going to eventually also come up, and we'd rather buy low and own those assets as well. So that's a real quick overview of diversification when it comes to financial assets. But you have your hand raised for the listener on audio. Well, can I just call on you?
Yeah, please do.
Okay, Stephen.
Thank you. I wanted to throw something in that maybe is a little bit upstream of what you're saying. So if the idea is, how do we not lose our money? You've got a pile of cash sitting in front of you, and you're saying, when you're invested in something, make sure that it's diverse. Okay. I would say if you have a pile of money in front of you, one of the things that you should do is put that money to work. That would be a good way to not lose your money, because there's an idea called inflation, which says that if you just take all of your money and pack it up into your closet and put it in drawers physically, by the end of the year, it has lost value. So you have lost your money. That's exactly the opposite of what we're trying to do in this episode. You have lost your money, even though it's all sitting there. I can see it. I can touch it. There it is. It's lost value because you just sat there with it and you didn't put it to work. Mark has just reminded us of Ecclesiastes 11, which says, go put it to work. You get that little Benjamin Franklin, and you tell him to go make some friends. You send him out into the world. You tell him to go do some work and make more. You have to do that. You have to take that risk and put your money out to work in order to not lose it. And let's assume that you're going to do that. Okay, I will do that. I'll take that risk. Then Mark is saying then step two would be make sure it's in as many diverse places as possible, and that will mitigate your risks, and you'll be able to capture gains in various markets. So
yeah,
just going to throw that in.
You know, I get excited about episodes like this where we're just covering tons of ground. And so I can't say that I necessarily wrote my notes in the proper order, but...
No, you're so excited, Mark. You're spitballing.
I was. And everything you're saying is 100% correct. So much so that it was right here in the notes. It says, failure to invest is also failing to protect money.
Oh, fair enough.
We wrote an article a couple years ago that said, it was called What Abraham Knew About Inflation. And I think that is a valuable, just quick read for anybody who's interested, because I have a lot of clients in the investment management space that go, well, you're telling me, Mark, that I can go put my money in a high yield savings account with zero risk, and I can earn 5.1%. That seems pretty good, because if I put it in the stock market, there's been years where I make 25 or 30% on it, but some years I lose 20%. So I'd like to just take the 5%. I could even do fine. If it grows by 5% every year, that seems pretty good. And if we look back at like 2023, inflation through the whole year, if you believe the numbers, which I think might be a little underreported, but was reported at 4.1%, which means our real rate of return was 1% on that money. You got 1% more purchasing power at the end of that year if you had invested in one of these, so-called low risk, you're not going to lose your money, high yield savings accounts. That's a huge factor for everybody to think about when they're thinking about like protecting financial assets. If you had a billionaire family and you wanted to create kind of escape, you've already kind of got escape velocity wealth. Inflation is still a humongous issue for you when you think in terms of many generations. Even giant pools of money like that can be eroded away by trying to sit on them and hiding them under your mattress. So
true.
You must deploy your wealth. You must deploy it in a variety of places. And then the next thing I put down here is you need to know who actually has custody of your money. You and I, I mentioned crypto as an asset class. It's an interesting one because have you ever heard the phrase? I think I said it to you in a moment of frustration, but not your keys, not your coins.
I have heard that phrase.
So there's all these custodians out there in the crypto world that will custody. That means they will be the ones who actually hold crypto assets for you. And they'll have an account set up that says, this is how much you've got. Well, you and I, a few years ago, learned that sometimes those companies
go under.
That Afro-headed white boy that almost tanked the entire crypto market, he got his hands into our honeypot of crypto, and we got away with about 20% of what we started with. And the reason is because we didn't, as much as we did our due diligence and said, well, this supposedly has been looked at by the SEC,
right,
there's some oversight, we didn't really know who was holding our money and what their condition was.
No, we did not.
So, you know, if you have a savings account or a checking account, there's something called FDIC insurance, and you get a whole lot of it. So if you're a married couple, you can get $500,000 on an account. That might be more than enough for most people that are holding cash in a demand deposit account like checking or savings. But you don't get that coverage if you've got money in an investment account. That FDIC insurance does not cover your Roth IRA, for example.
Right.
If you have a financial advisor, it's very important to know, do they have custody of my money? So my advisor, you know, Bill Smith, is he got a safe where all the money is? Like, where is the actual asset that he says I have when I get my statement? You and I have a close friend who lost millions in an inheritance because some elder at his church, who was also a financial advisor, fled the country with all his clients' money. So one thing to consider when you're thinking about where you put financial resources, who actually holds it? And, you know, our firm, we use big custodians, companies like Charles Schwab. You should still do your due diligence, but that's a lot probably more secure to know that my money is at Fidelity or my money is at Schwab or wherever, versus, hey, this shop popped up and I really liked the sales guys and they said they're going to custody my money. Well, I would want to do a lot more due diligence there. So who has custody of my money? What protections are in place if something happened that made that business no longer viable?
On that note, Mark, if we're talking about, here's my pile of money, I'm trying to protect it, I want it to stay as large as possible, those people that are doing custody, whether you, if you got a financial advisor or you're putting your money with your company's 401k, et cetera, holy cow, guys, and I'm sure this is in your notes somewhere, Mark, we've got to look out for what the fees are on every single one of those accounts, because you might see a commercial and you think, oh, this is a Schwab account, so they're so respectable and dependable, I'm sure I'm getting a good deal there. And then if you do a little bit of digging, you can find, holy cow, every year these people are eating a significant amount of my earnings just from the fees. And again, let's just think of your pile of money like a pile of food, and there's little mouths on the edge just eating away at your pile. You go, well, I still kind of have a little bit of a pile. And every year, inflation is eating it. We want to like to minimize that. Market forces, diversification kind of fights against that. And we want as few mouths eating from our pile as possible for the sake of our generations. Mark, do you have any anecdotes off the top of your head of where you've seen, where people thought that everything was just fine? You did a little bit of digging, go like, these fees are killing you, my man.
Well, I'm thinking of a conversation you and I had, I don't know, 6 weeks ago with somebody, where they just brought, hey, I have heard you guys like what you're saying.
Yes.
Take a look at my accounts. And,
yes.
And we always are happy to do that. Sometimes the answer is you're in good shape. Go continue on. And we looked at this guy's accounts, and I've seen a lot, okay? I've seen a lot of fee structures, and you know, I'm not anti-fee. I've seen people that are paying $65,000 a year to a financial advisor and getting way more than that in value because right. they have very complicated scenes, and it's not even just a percentage of their asset question. It's like you wouldn't be doing half the things that you're doing if you didn't have this expert alongside right. of you. So I'm not anti-fees. However, this particular fella, he didn't really know us, but he had just heard about us and was open. So he's like, here, take a look. Here's all my stuff. And we cracked the hood and we said, okay, you've got not that much money. It's being invested in a few assets that are basically the types of things you could just go open a Vanguard account and say, give me the three standard exchange traded funds.
It's just buy them off the shelf.
I think in one case, everything was in just one of the old, like, I'm going to retire this year, put me in that fund.
Right.
But it wasn't the cheap funds. These funds had between 1% and 2% fees baked into the funds.
Bad.
On top of that, the advisor was charging 1.5%.
Bad.
So now we're at around 3.5%. And on top of that, the particular investments that had been sold to this person had a 5% upfront commission.
Oh!
So it's the most egregious I've seen since I've been doing the work of financial planning and investment.
Heartbreaker.
And you know, maybe there's a world in which this person goes, I'm getting so much value from things. You know, I do talk to people on the flip side of this who go, I'm not paying a percentage of my assets. And I go, well, you've had this account sitting in cash for the last 8 years, and you would be doubly rich today if you were paying any Yahoo to just put it in something, going back to our first point. So sometimes the answer is you don't need a financial planner. Absolutely. Other times the answer is, you might want to use one, but in any case, whether you're talking about a planner's fees or an investment manager or just the fees baked into an account, I mean, we see things like people leave a job and their 401k, which was a good 401k while they were employed, has a little trigger clause in it that says, if you leave the company, the fee goes from being covered by your employer to being covered by you, and suddenly I'm paying an extra 1% in fees.
Yeah.
And you just need to know all of those things.
Yeah.
It's like we always talk about with spending. It's great to intend to not spend too much, but don't just sit down and say, I'm going to become an expert budgeter overnight. At least plug your money scene into some tracking tools and go, what do I even spend? With fees, it's the same way. Could I just do a quick survey of all my investments and see what are the total fees I'm paying every year? And that would be a good move if you've never done that. Just pop open your accounts, look up the expense ratios on the investments you're choosing, see if maybe you're paying somebody to manage your accounts, add all that up and go, am I getting this much value out of what I'm doing?
Yes. Folks, it's amazing to me how many people will they will strain at a gnat and swallow a camel, just forking over money and thinking, well, it doesn't really matter. Of course it matters. It's your pile. This is the money that you've worked and you've saved and you said no to yourself to have some money. And imagine just going with your investments. Well, as long as it sort of is going up, generally speaking, I mean, what does it really matter if they're taking 5% away from my money every year? It matters a lot. Please pay attention to this stuff. We are telling you that protecting the money that you've already got is part of your job. Please look into these things or have someone look into it for you so that you can get some real answers. What is happening to the money that I think I'm investing?
The last thing I just want to talk about on the investing front is an emergency fund. So you might think, well, that's not really about keeping my money, right? That's just about if I lose my income, which is the next thing we're going to talk about. But a fully funded emergency fund, which we think of as somewhere between 3 and 6 months of what it costs to run your household. So that might be your mortgage payment, if you have a car payment, and your grocery bill, and anything that you would not stop doing if you lost your income. So there might be things like, oh, we have a $400 a month entertainment budget, but if I lost my job, I'm just going to not do that. So you might not have to include that, but having an emergency fund actually protects your investment accounts, because you could have $200,000 in an IRA, and you go, well, I don't really, you know, I can weather an emergency. I've got $200,000 invested and growing for me. Well, if you have to dip into that, A, if it's in a retirement account, you're going to pay penalties if you're under retirement age. And B, it might not be the right time to pull money out of that account. We could be in a market downturn. Having an emergency fund gives you the flexibility to say, I'm not going to reach into that pile. And the third reason that a fully funded emergency fund is really useful is because there's tax implications. Whether you have a retirement account, you're going to pay tax on that. You might just have a regular old investment account, which we think is a good idea in the mix because you can pull from it at any time, but you will pay taxes when you sell investments there. So emergency funds protect not only your income and your ability to continue paying your bills and not having your house repossessed and things like that, it also actually protects your long-term investments.
Okay, let me ask you a follow-up question. I'm trying to put myself in the position of somebody that's listening to this and I'm thinking, I'm trying to protect the money that I've earned. I hear you talking about investments. Of course, I'm trying to put some money toward retirement. And you're telling me there should also be this kind of sacred money that's sitting there liquid, ready to go. Do you have any offhand advice about, okay, let's say you're a young person, you're starting your family, you're trying to be responsible. What of the savings money that I've got left over at the end of the month, how should I apportion out? Do you think that an emergency fund should be prioritized over investment money? Which should I be building?
That's probably a whole series of podcasts.
I knew that's what you're going to say.
I'll give you a quick kind of finger in the wind. Here's my gut reaction to that question.
Great.
It is, I mean, you know, we aren't always Dave Ramsey fans here, but sometimes he has historically said some things that are really helpful.
Sure.
And one of his baby steps is that you need to be able to weather what he calls an emergency. We would just call it like a small bump in the road, like a $1,500 emergency. Believe it or not, most Americans cannot handle a small emergency like that.
Right.
So we would always say, if you don't have $1,500 that you just could get to right now, don't think about, well, what about my Roth IRA? But once I have kind of that very basic, then often it's very wise to go get the match that your employer is offering in a 401k. So a lot of employers will say, hey, we'll match dollar for dollar the first 4% that you put into this 401k plan.
Get it.
Get that money, because honestly, even if we have to pull out money and pay penalties and taxes on it, we just got a 100% return on it the day we put it in. So we're in good shape, even if we had to do that. But beyond that, most everyone is going to have to save more than just the matching part of their 401k. That's when we start saying, now we want to fully fund that 6-month emergency fund. And after that, we can start thinking about, well, do I want to do a Roth IRA in addition to my workplace plan? Or do I want to just pour extra money into the workplace plan? Or do I want to do a taxable account or buy a rental property? Whole lot of options after that. But that's kind of my order, is be able to weather a small emergency, get the match if you're working somewhere that's giving you a 100% or a 50% return on your money out the second it hits the account. And then build the 6-month emergency fund before you start worrying about next steps.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. Now, I have one more thought. When you've been talking about your 401ks, I'm thinking about matching. I've done that thing before. I've certainly recommended that to people many times. Hey, if they're offering some free money, you go get that free money. My question is, have you ever heard of people who they built up a 401k, you know, $13,000 worth, in the first few years of their career. Then they moved on to their big job, which they held for 25 years. And the first 401k, they never switched it over. It sat there and they lost the account number. They don't even know what happened to that money.
Yeah.
Isn't that part of the keeping your eyes on the pile that you've earned?
I would say, you know, when we think about tips on how not to lose your money, one of the best tips is don't lose your money.
Oh, I think that's a great tip.
And you would be shocked to know how many people lose track of old accounts. And they, you know, if I'm working with them, exactly what you described, maybe they're doing great and it's not like they desperately need that account to make ends meet, but we start going back and somebody goes, you know, I think I actually might have another account back there. There's tools online and you can even enter information and see if there's any missing 401ks out there that you might have left at an old company. And sometimes it's $1,000, but you know what's not very smart? To just lose $1,000.
No, so, if you drop $1,000 on the street, that's been a bad day.
And another thing that, like, in terms of just not losing money, I really, about every 3 or 4 years, love a quick visit to my state's unclaimed property registry. Have you ever done this?
I have.
Okay. Well, I went to the Utah and Texas and Virginia because I've lived in those states in the past couple decades and looked at the unclaimed property registry, and I had not a lot, but some unclaimed money that was due to me in all three states.
There you go. You know what this is like? This is like when you go to the Shakey's Pizza and there's the gumball machine and you fiddle in the bottom to see, is there a little return? Was there a return quarter in there? Maybe somebody didn't get the gumball. This is like that. This is the financier's version of like seeing what's on the unclaimed registry for the state.
And it was not nothing, right? I put my sister's info in there. She had like $1,000 worth of unclaimed property.
Awesome.
So it can be worth your time. And if you just Google your state unclaimed property, you'll find every state has a site where you can enter a little bit of info and they'll show you if you've got anything that you have lost. So
that's
the last tip on how to not lose money that you've made, is don't lose it.
Okay. I have one last tip on not losing the money you made. I'm thinking of a conversation was with a guy this week. Was it yesterday? Might've been yesterday, the day before. And it was right over there. It was right over there, about a half a mile that way. We met and he just started telling me some of his anxiety around his money. Now we're talking about his money that he's earned. It's come inside his house through a paycheck or dividend or something. It's part of the mound that he's in charge of. And he said this to me, because we don't have a budget of any kind, I am immediately ashamed, embarrassed, and afraid when I think of how much money we have just frittered away on just random, seeing something on Amazon, seeing something in the Walmart or the Target. You know that? Yeah. Could I have waited 6 months for that purchase? Yeah, sure. It was a few $100s. It was a little upgrade. It was something that we saw. I didn't think anything of it. And he said, I think of my sort of dozen years of marriage, never having had a budget, never had a budget in all these years of marriage. And I think of those hundreds of dollars. And I think of the little upgrades on the trips that might be $1,000. And I think of, if I could bundle up all of that miscellaneous ill-spent money that wasn't planned for, it wasn't strategic, it wasn't even needed, it was just frittered away. If I could bundle that up and have the benefit of years and years of compounding interest, he said, it makes me sad to think of what I may have stolen from my grandchildren simply by not watching where my money goes. And so I have to throw in the simple act of, as you often talk about, knowing the condition of your flocks, just simply knowing where your money is and tracking it And the same thing that you're doing with investment money, do you do that with your grocery money? Do you know where your grocery money goes? Do you know that it costs you more to go to that store than this store? And if we buy the same amount of food at this place, it's $50 cheaper. And so we think of that $50 that is not coming off of our pile as growth money for the generations, or maybe that's leading us toward the new car that we need to buy, replacement car, I don't know, whatever it is. But I think that just simply not, you're doing such a fine job, Mark, of talking about keeping your eye on your investment money. And you mentioned the spending money. We've got to keep an eye on that as well. I don't mean being persnickety and being miserly about, you kids will never purchase a candy bar on the when we're doing the checkout line at the grocery store. No, there's plenty of room in a budget for that kind of thing. But if you don't even know what's happening to your money, how could you possibly fool yourself into thinking that you're caring for the pile of money that's come under your roof and that you're responsible for? I think budgeting comes so easily to you, Mark, that you maybe think that that's sort of a given with people. But as we know, as you know, trying to help people with their money, that's a huge outage for people, is just watching their everyday money, would you say?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's true. The speed at which money can just vanish if you completely go, it's fine. This has happened to me. And like you said, I like budgeting. I'm a weirdo in that regard.
Right.
I like to really keep tabs on it. But there's been months where I'm like, oh, we have an extra chunk of money coming in this month. I know that it's coming. So we're going to be fine. Like, we can let off. And I might, for 20 days of the month, just kind of go, I'm not going to look too closely at my entertainment spending, and I'm just going to buy whatever the heck I want when I go to the grocery store, not worry
right.
about it. And we're going to go out to eat two or three times a week for the next few weeks. And at the end of that month, it can be easily $2,000
of
extra expense that just kind of popped in. And I go, I wasn't particularly happier during that last 3 weeks, but I did spend a whole lot more. And it's like you said, it's not to say don't spend money. And the whole point of budgeting is to just spend as little as possible. That is not true. However, if you don't track at all, and your only barometer for am I okay is how much is left in the account when I open it up, and it's like opening the purse and saying, well, I guess I have some coins, so I'll just buy things.
Yeah,
that's not a good way to go. And you will end up much, much, much less wealthy over the long run.
Right. Okay. Now, Mark, as we are coming in for a landing on this first episode of how we're protecting our financial capital, I'm just thinking on this budgeting point. A lot of people don't know what is the bare bones amount of money that we can get by on in a month, and so they do that thing that you're describing. They just kind of spend money and hope there's some left over at the end. Can you think of any way that a family in like a month's time could figure out what is our bare bones amount of money that it takes for us to live on in a month? How could they possibly ever know that mysterious figure? Any ideas?
I can think of at least a couple ways. The first, they could move to North Korea and just experience what it means to eat grass outside your large block housing development.
Okay.
Most people will not opt for that option, but
no.
they might say, what we would like to do is participate along with our friends at abrahamswell.com in something that we call low dough feb.
Hey, there it is.
That's short for low dough February.
That's right.
It's a month in which we take the shortest month of the year and say, well, what would it feel like to suck the belt in as tight as we can? And, you know, it answers that question you just asked. We now know if we had to, here's what our bottom line is to keep surviving. And I tell people this all the time. I was talking to a family just the other day, and they're considering a big change to their spending. like, hey, if we do this, it's going to cost a lot more, but it might be the right move. And I was like, well, you know what? You can do it. You can practice doing it without doing it. So if somebody tells me I'm thinking about buying a house and my rent is $2,000, my mortgage will be $4,000, I go, why don't you just try living on a budget that has a $4,000 line item for housing? And either you will go, we hate this, it makes everything right. miserable, let's not do it. That's a good thing to learn.
Yes.
Or you'll go, this works. It works for us. And if you try it on for size for 3 months, you've got $6,000 in your pocket. You can put that towards your down payment or whatever. So try on spending changes beforehand. You know, that's something that a budget lets you do.
That's a great thought. Most people don't have the patience nor the self-control to do that over an entire month's time. But you know what? Most people in this country also don't end up wealthy. So this would be something that a smart person does. And by the way, you know, if you had to find that bottom line, you've never really waded into those waters, you think LOTOFEB sounds like a pretty good idea so that we could find sort of our baseline of what it takes us to live. There's no law that says you couldn't have a LOTO August or a LOTO September and plan for it and say, we've got to find this out and we can't wait 9 months to make that happen. So you could do that.
You could even, we give you special permission to have a LOTO first 28 days of any month you choose. If you're
I like it.
Because
we give you an Abrahamic indulgence to make that happen.
We get off the hook a little in Feb with a shorter month. So if that's the only thing stopping you from doing it now, we will give you a free shortened month.
Sweet. Okay, so we are in a series that's talk to us about how to protect our capitals. And we have just covered how to not lose the money how to protect the money that's already under my roof. The next episode that we do, it's going to be about how to protect the money that I'm expecting to come in.
A lot of people just don't even think about that as an asset that they're stewarding. Your job, your salary is something you have to steward. It's not just like, well, I steward it once the money's in my bank account. Well, no, you actually have a stream of income and you could do all sorts of stupid things to mess that up. And so we're going to talk about that. And then whether it's on the next episode or we do three on this financial protection piece, we're also going to talk about the thing that, man, I love you listeners because you love to talk about multi-generational stuff when it comes to money. That's also not a normal American thing. Most people are not thinking, well, if I could buy a 200-year bond for my great-great-great-grandchildren, I'd do it. Most people think that would be stupid, but not you. And because of that, we're going to talk about how do you protect money multi-generationally. And, you know, we've told stories of the inevitable chuckleheads that are downline from some smart patriarch who makes a bunch of money and puts it into the service of his family. And then, you know, young Brandon comes along and blows it all on Ferraris. How do you deal with that? We're going to talk about that and a bunch of other stuff on just how do you set up wealth for the long term. So all that coming on the next Abraham's Wallet.